Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Paez.
We're getting a 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased. The Chef Smith,
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClary, he's not paid to work, too. He did it. He did it. Steamboat lined up. McClary has done it. McClary has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, what's up? And welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000. Open phone lines 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. On Snapchat, snapjhood. Here on this rainy Wednesday night, we will have Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between coming up at the bottom of the hour. Also, we'll hear from Ryan Harris. You know that name, Ryan Harris? No, not a dude that was in your class when you were in middle school. Not your best friend that played. You played shortstop with in the Sandlots. No, Ryan Harris is a color analyst for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish on the radio side. Did a nice job with Paul Burmeister. We'll hear from Ryan and get his thoughts about the Irish as they continue on at their very solid victory, by the way, against the Michigan Wolverines. Right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So we'll hear from Ryan Harris coming up. So if you're a Fighting Irish, a Notre Dame fan, we got you coming up at 9:10 right here on ESPN 1000. Plenty to get to that I didn't get to yesterday. We'll try to get to all of it today here on ESPN 1000. If not, there's always Thursday's show. And Thursday's show is when I'm able to get the trash can out.
Right. We just dump out everything extra on the table. We spread it all out.
So Thursday's show might be the show we just throw everything in the garbage, everything I don't get to, because I have a ton. Got 4 or 5 hours worth of material here, but we got to go step by step. So before we hear from Alex Brown, are we going to hear from Alex Brown, by the way? Is he okay? Check in with him.
We sure hope so.
He better not ghost us. He's sketchy. He knows what's going on. He knows that he's scheduled to be on the show. You try to call him, you text him, you get in, you sneak into his DMs, if you'll pardon the expression, and you do what you can again. And then he's like, "Yeah, I'm good." And then he gets sketchy. So keep your eyes on, because Alex Brown's scheduled to be with us at 8:10. I want to get his Bears Packers information here on this Meat and Cheese Week. But before we get to that, Le'Veon Bell. That's the big story on the NFL page on ESPN.com. What is up with Le'Veon Bell? How come they can't get that the Steelers can't come to terms? So from Jeremy Fowler, right, the head writer for the Pittsburgh Steelers on ESPN.com. Steelers players are really livid over Le'Veon Bell's extended absence. "He effed us," one veteran told ESPN as he walked out of the locker room. "Barring an unforeseen development, the all-pro running back is not expected to play Sunday against the Browns," according to a source, his agent, Adisa Bakari. He hinted that Bell might be willing to wait it out longer to preserve his long-term health. Bell hasn't signed his $14.5 million franchise tag and can become a free agent in 2019 as long as he signs it by week 11. "If you don't want to be here, it is what it is. Hold out 10 weeks," Maurice Pouncey said. Pouncey told ESPN that Bell would show up to work on Wednesday and count on it. Well, it's Wednesday. Is it not today Wednesday? So, and he still hasn't shown up. So here's the agent for the guy that we're talking about, Le'Veon Bell, Adisa Bakari. He says this.
So what is the plan moving forward for Le'Veon Bell?
I'll answer that question with a question. Because you know very well, Brady and Bruce, and I'm not obviously going to discuss our plan publicly. But I'll answer the question or attempt to with a question. What would the goal, you're Kevin Colbert, you're Mike Tomlin, and you possibly have a once-in-a-generation player for one more season. What would your plan be?
Now, is this for the entire season, though, or just up until Week 10?
When we find out. I think Mike Tomlin said it best yesterday. He'll get there when he's there, and we'll address those issues when he arrives.
You joined us over the summer and said the plan was the same as last year. Do you mind me asking you what's changed, other than maybe mindset?
No, I said no. Again, if memory serves me, I said Le'Veon had every intention to make this the best season of his career. That has not changed. That's his intention, to make this the best statistical season of his career.
Well, again, you know, with all due respect, Adisa, my question to you was, will the plan be the same? And your response was, barring something unexceptional, yes. This is a different plan, is it not?
Well, and there you go. We had something exceptional to occur.
So, Adisa Bakari, the agent for Le'Veon Bell, on SiriusXM NFL Radio Channel 88. Okay, so what is the deal here? Pouncey says that I felt confident that Le'Veon Bell was going to be here. Now when it's game time, you got $14 million looming there. You're still not here. Your team really wants you here. At this point, we got James Conner. So I'm looking through this here. And again, to try to explain the importance of Le'Veon Bell of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who is completely holding out, still in an impasse. Last year, Bell did not report to the team until September 1st. Even though he missed all the preseason, Bell played in 15 games, 406 offensive touches. There were 60 more than any other player, including LeSean McCoy of the Bills. Over the last two seasons, Bell has the most offensive touches, scrimmage yards, yards after contact, rushes, as well as a rush yards after first contact. Only Ezekiel Elliott has more rush yards in that span than Bell. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't understand why he is not in camp. I mean, yes, $14 million is looming, but what is the other deal here? You heard Bruce Murray ask Adisa Bakari, what's going on with this, right? I mean, all the numbers are in front of me here of how good he is, but he's so good that they're just not going to, he's just not going to come to camp. He's just not going to come with the Steelers. Now, I'm looking through Twitter here, twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood, and other places here. Ed Boucher says, more Ramon Foster on Bell. He's making seven times what I make, twice as much as Al Villanueva, who's on the offensive line, is making. And we're the guys who do it for him. And Boucher, again, who covers the Steelers. Steelers teammates not happy with Le'Veon Bell, no show, led by veteran guard Ramon Foster, their player rep. What do you do? Here's a guy here who doesn't give a damn. I guess we'll have to treat it as such. I just hate it comes to this. There's more from NFL.com about this. Maurice Pouncey, as I mentioned, a star is born every year in the NFL. Did anyone know Kareem Hunt would be an all-pro before last season? If James Conner did not have cancer, he'd be a first-round pick. Just watch him. I mean, DeCastro on Bell. DeCastro on Bell? Is he hip? Is he hip enough to be with the Steelers? Is he hip? DeCastro on Bell, just sit out the whole year then. Wow. DeCastro firing on him. But I know that there's always going to be issues when it comes to money. But again, I'm seeing all of his teammates, guys on his offensive line, that are mad at him because he won't sign. You see what's happening here, Felix. This is bad.
This is horrible. And like you said, it's the offensive line, man, right? So these are the guys that pretty much help you, and they make your job so much easier. These are the same guys that you remember when Ezekiel Elliott did tremendous his first year, right? He bought all their guys like these tractors, right? Remember that?
Yes.
Like he, you know, like the offensive line is so important to you. And when they're talking about you like this, Man, that's not good.
I mean, so even if there is a connection with Le'Veon Bell and his team, that he finally officially gets his money and everything is cool, when he walks back in that locker room, all those guys, those players, his own teammates are saying, how come you're not here? The season's starting and yet you guys are playing games. Oh, man, that is something. General manager Kevin Colbert of the Steelers, who issued a statement Monday, said that the team is disappointed that Bell hasn't signed his tender, will not be made available for comment, but the Steelers issued a statement through the director of communications. We are not going to discuss any conversations through the media. If Adisa would like to talk further, he has our phone number. I'm trying to think of the Bears equivalent to that. I guess that would be like Khalil Mack, like what he went through with the Oakland Raiders. Or, you know, I mean, that's the only equivalent I could come up with, that if that happened here. Listen, there's always been contract issues and snags. It happened to Aaron Donald. It's happened to Mack before he's traded to the Bears, but my goodness. And it's just so mysterious how his agent was kind of going about it. Like, there's, what's the other shoe to drop? You're affecting this guy's money. Anyway, you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. So glad that you're with us here. As we wait for Alex Brown, what has Alex Brown said? Has he said anything to you? What has he said to you, Eric?
I have not heard anything. So talked to him yesterday. Sent him a reminder about 140 today. Sent him a reminder about 750. And now I've called him six times.
I can hear the phone ringing over there. I hear
it. I had
ringing.
It to my ear as you were here. That was my sixth call right there.
See what I'm saying? If anyone knows where Alex Brown is, tell him to call the station.
Yeah, send him the smoke signals. Let him know.
That's a shame.
See if he calls back. He's got a bunch of missed calls sitting on his phone here.
Well, we're busy right here. So if he can't give us the time of day in the next 12 minutes, then we're just going to.
Oh, then we ride on.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We ride on for the season.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, we ride on for the season. I don't got time for this. Merkin wants to hear Alex Brown. He's waiting for it. He's waiting for Alex Brown. He told me, he said he's waiting for Alex Brown to call.
Makes two of us, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Makes two of us.
Thank goodness I'm prepared. So we move on here to the Bears. And so I saw this from Pro Football, I believe this is from Pro Football Focus, talking about the Bears and the Super Bowl odds. You know, the reason why that there's so much money that was put into Vegas for the Cleveland Browns to be able to win six or more games. I believe the number was 6.5 last time I saw it. 6.5 wins for the Browns. The reason why that is the case is because people are trying to bank on who is going to be the next LA Rams. The Rams came out of nowhere for many teams and many people last year. They're like, wow, the Rams are this team that made the playoffs and they were so young and they really came out of nowhere. And some money has gone toward the Bears and the Browns, because what they want to do is they want to capitalize on a team that comes out of nowhere. Now, as I mentioned before, and I've been saying this for a long time now, I think that the base of victories for the Bears this upcoming season is six wins. Now, I saw the last thing I saw in Bovada is that the I think it was 6.5, I believe it was, for wins for this Bears team. And I think that that's fair, 6.5. So from Pro Football Focus, it suggests that the Bears nearly tripled their Super Bowl chances by adding star pass rusher Khalil Mack to their roster. But that only gets them up to 0.5%. They're still stuck in a brutal division with two likely juggernauts in the Packers and the Vikings and a Lions team that went 9-7 a year ago. Their best bet for a postseason run might actually be in the NFC North. That gets tough enough when you have a 4-team race. You know, they think that there's going to be a 10-6 team. It's going to be a 7-9 team. So as I look at this upcoming season, I haven't necessarily made my official predictions on the entirety of the NFL just as of yet. But I will tell you that because the Bears are in such a tough division, it's going to be hard to see the Bears anywhere above 500. That's why I don't have them at 8 wins. I have them at 6 wins. And again, I believe that as a base, 6 wins is just fine. I, you know, in the end, you'll see all these Super Bowl odds and people putting a lot of money toward the Bears or the Browns, trying to figure out, you know, how this team, which team's going to get hot. I don't think it's the Bears going to get hot, even with Khalil Mack. And here's why. Khalil Mack is not the quarterback. Khalil Mack is not an offensive guy. Khalil Mack is a guy that can make a difference in the defense. The defense was already pretty solid last year. And so I look at this as a building block year, and then this season will tell a greater story than I can ever tell about what Mitch Trubisky is going to be. I saw Mitch Trubisky in college, and it was only for a handful of games, and I was not wowed by it. And to the point where I was scratching my head at the time and said, well, there is a lot of people that really want Mitch Trubisky in the top three of this draft. And I was like, I said, that's funny, because I look at Mitch Trubisky at North Carolina, and he looked like a guy that just needed more seasoning. That's just me, though. But it just shows you how much influence the combine has on teams and evaluation. Because in North Carolina, man, it's not like I was going out of my way to look for North Carolina football. Sometimes just on. Sometimes on, like the early game. And you see them at home and just kind of watch a couple of North Carolina games and say that, you know, it's got a nice arm, but not the wow factor that we see with other quarterbacks now in 2018. And so many wanted to look at Mitch Trubisky to the point where, again, the general manager of this football team, Ryan Pace, went all in and said, well, we can't have the 49ers get him, so we got to get him. And, of course, Ryan Pace was influenced by George McCaskey. George McCaskey says, I want my quarterback, woof, woof.
Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall.
And Ryan Pace said, okay, I'll get you your quarterback. Because they were tired of Jay Cutler. Because you can understand the Jay Cutler fatigue. You had it. I had it. The Bears fans had it. They said, we get tired of Jay Cutler being the butt of the jokes. He had all the memes. There was news operations that would have in their department, like Jay Cutler turns, Jay Cutler fakes an injury. He was like on Kimmel. Like, people were talking about him as a joke to lead off Kimmel, to lead off, you know, these other shows. It's like, oh, he's part of the monologue. That's how bad it was. And so, to me, I just think that there was Cutler fatigue, and that's why Trubisky's here. Now, as much as the Bears go all in for this quarterback and go all in for Mitch Trubisky, doesn't necessarily mean that that's the guy. I will not say he's the guy. 16 games as a starter will tell you whether or not he's the guy or not, if he lasts 16 games. So let's keep our eyes on that. Let's keep our eyes on that. Oh, by the way, Rob Domofsky from ESPN.com writes this, talking about the Bears and the Packers, because this is meat and cheese week. After playing for both, usually one sticks. And so what he wrote about is Bears and Packers. Bears playing for the Packers and vice versa. And so, of course, in the top of the list, if you think of a Bears player to play for the Packers, right? You think about a Bears player playing for the Packers. What's the first name that comes to mind? Mongo, Steve McMichael, of course. 191 games and 16 with the Green Bay Packers. If you ever see Mongo McMichael, ask him the question that I'm going to give you the answer to. And the question is, Mongo, after all those years with the Chicago Bears, why did you play for the Packers? And Mongo's going to say, I want to steal their money. That's what he would say. He would say, hey, I'm here to steal their money. God was crying that night because I was playing for the Packers. Mongo will say that at his bar. Anywhere you find him, he'll say that. Rob Davis, who was a Bear, also played with the Packers. Josh Sitton, Bob Jeter, and Jim Flanagan also was a Bear and a Packer as well. But Mongo, he's on the top of the list. 191 games with the Bears and 16 with Green Bay. Wow, those are the names that stand out on this list right here. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Alex is on line 12. Hello, Alex.
Hey, what's going on, my man?
Look, man, do you know what time it is?
Oh, yeah.
Where have you been today? Where have you been?
Oh, man, I have been all over the place. My wife is running for Lake County Board, so I am going everywhere with her. So, yeah, just support, showing our face everywhere. I mean, trying to see if we can get her elected.
Look at you. Look at you, man. Look at you. I mean, so she's a star in the family now. She's run for office.
Yes, my mom, my star has dimmed. Yes, you're shining bright.
That's pretty good. The reason why I wanted to talk to you, Alex, obviously because of Meat and Cheese Weekend, is the Bears and Packers. But we have not spoken about Khalil Mack since the deal took place. So when you found out about Khalil Mack, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I've been hearing about it, right? So the initial reaction was, holy, I can't say it, but I'm like, oh, man. Mm-hmm. Because he's that good. For so long, we've been searching for that special player. Okay, we get Pernell McPhee, and we think he's that guy. Well, Pernell McPhee, he's a good player. He's not a special player. Like, a special player makes everybody around him better. A special player, as just like Khalil Mack is on the road to the Hall of Fame. That's a special-type player, and he's going to guard the double team every single time. If not, he's going to be one-on-one. I mean, we've all seen the highlights. He pick up 320, 330-pound men and sling them like they're nothing. So, not to mention he's a Florida kid. So, I mean, born and raised in Florida. So, I mean, we shouldn't be too surprised by that. Okay. So, but yeah, he's legit. I was super excited. I still am. Cannot wait. I hope he's just training camp is. There's a certain part of training camp that you need. I hope he's ready for game one, like the Khalil Mack that we all anticipate seeing. I hope he's that guy. But if he's not, I'm not worried at all. I know he's only going to get better from whatever he shows us come Sunday night.
Alex Brown from NBC Sports Chicago with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You and I are both on the same page with this defense. Before Khalil Mack got here, this defense had the arrow pointing up. I like what they did. I thought it was a playoff-like defense at times. Mm-hmm. What stands out now that Mack is here, what do you think of the defense as a whole?
I think they're a top-five defense. I mean, I'm pushing a little further if we can get Leonard Floyd. I think Hicks is going to be the Hicks we saw last year, if not better now that Khalil Mack is here. They can't just double-team Hicks every time. I think you put Leonard Floyd in the perfect position where he needs to be, and for his skill set, that is being on the outside, rushing, one-on-one blocking, that is what he needs. I think that's what he'll eat at, but I think that wrapped-up hand, that broken hand will bother him until he gets that off. But once he gets it off, I think that D-line is going to be nasty. Eddie Goldman is going to take another step. I think Jonathan Bullard will come on a little bit this year and show that he can play and make a dent in this league. And then you look at that secondary, Fuller. Fuller is I love Fuller. I think Fuller knows I love him. He's my guy. Mm-hmm. I need Fuller to play like he played last year. You don't want people thinking that, what's his contract year, now he plays his butt off. Okay, show you can play like that every single year. Be that guy. And if he can do that, I think Amos takes another step. I think Eddie Jackson, I think the sky's the limit for him. My gosh, that secondary is going to be nasty. And I haven't even gotten to our top pick this year and Danny Trevathan, who we all know. Danny's going to knock somebody's head off this year. So we all know, like, these guys are – I haven't been this excited, I'm going to say, since, the first quarter of the 2009 season about a team, because – I say the first quarter because I think Urlacher got hurt just before that. So when he got hurt, all that went away. All that excitement was gone. But, like, this team, as a team, I think they're good. As a defense, I think they can be great.
So this defense you think is better than your defense went to the Super Bowl with, right?
Whoa, slow down. Slow down. Whoa, hold up. Slow down. Slow down. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Wait. Nah, you shoot them. Your shot's fired. Hold on. No way. No way. Now – are they headed that way? Absolutely. But when you look at our defense, I mean, most of those guys, I mean, we did draft Peanut, you draft Lance Briggs, you draft Ethan Vassar, you get Tommy Harris, and you start to get these pieces together. But who's the leader on this defense? Just because Khalil Mack gets paid the most, I don't necessarily mean he's the leader. So let's see. We all got in line. 54 was the leader. All right, let's go. And I'd like to lean towards Khalil Mack being the leader, but I think that's that's going to have to be proven by him on the football field here. So once he does that, and I anticipate that he will, then I think as long as guys fall in line and say, you know what, this is our guy, this is who we're following, lead us and we're going to follow. And that, I think then they'll take that step and get to the point where they no longer think they're good. They know they're good, and they understand that what they have to do to win. And for us, I don't think we had a high-powered offense. Maybe 06. 06 was pretty good, man. 06 was a pretty good offense. They scored a lot of points. But I think this offense right here, although young and it's their first season being together under this particular coaching regime, I think we're going to see a lot of sparks out of this offense. So with all that said, their special teams I don't think is like ours with Hester.
Right.
I think that'll be different. But, Tariq Cohen is a fire plug, so he can really make some things happen back there. We'll see. Let's let it play out. I think they're more like a better offense, but kind of like the 05 team. But the 06 Super Bowl team was, we went to the Super Bowl. So, we got to get to the playoffs. We got to win the division. This division's tough. It's tough. It only got tougher from last year. So you add a Kirk Cousins to a Minnesota team, you bring it. They get a Dalvin Cook back, and we know what Green Bay is going to bring with Aaron Rodgers and that crew. So, I'm not even going to talk about Detroit. You know, they're going to throw the ball all over the place. They're not going to have a running back. But, hey, you know what you're going to get. So we have to win the division. That's what we have to do. So find our identity. Is it going to be running? Is it going to be throwing the ball? I think there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. But, hey, you got a lot of pieces on this team, and I think they got a shot to compete in this division, maybe even win it.
Yeah, you were excited about that defense until I compared it to your defense back in the Super Bowl. you stopped me in the tracks. Wait a minute, you was excited. So excited. Wait a minute now. Slow down.
I know, man. I don't know if Peanut will get into the Hall of Fame. I think people will talk about it. I think he'll get some votes to get in. I think Lance will go in. I think, Urlacher went in. Hester, I think, will go in. And then you got Olin Kruse on the other side, who I think will go in. Reuben Brown. I mean, we're talking about we had some Hall of Fame players on those teams. So
Spice.
I don't see Hall of Fame players. I see some really good players, and I see one Hall of Fame potential player in Mac. But outside of that, I mean, like, that's why we were good. It's because we had some really, really, really good players. So and then we had a lot of guys that understood their place and understood their job. And if you do your job, then everything will get done. I think they have to play together a little bit to get that done. I think it's going to be some growing pains this year, although we're going to see a really good football team next year. I'm going to stick with it. Next year, I think they're going to make some hay next year. I think they're going to really not surprise people. I think they're just going to kick some people in the face next year.
What are your fondest memories of Bears versus Packers, Alex?
Oh, man. I got two personal. The personal one for me is the 2009 season. Blocking a field goal to go into overtime against the Packers at the coldest game in at Soldier Field. That for me is the one personally. But I think when I first got here, we couldn't beat Green Bay. So the barometer was always Green Bay. And then the 06 season came, and we were like, you know what? At least I was thinking to myself, like, we got Green Bay that first game. We're gonna see if we're as good as we think we are, because we thought we were pretty doggone good, and we beat them 26-0, and that was, I think, one of those stamps that said, "Oh, okay, yep, we are pretty good."
Mm-hmm.
So those two games right there are probably the two games that I remember the most for team wise, and then just personal.
What's your gut feeling about Sunday's game against Green Bay?
Oh, man. We run the ball, we'll beat Green Bay. So I think our defense is good enough to hold them to under 21 points. I think our defense is good enough to do that. But we have to run the football to control the clock, to keep Aaron off the field. I can't give a prediction yet. I can't do it. But I think it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a close game. And I do like my chances. I like our chances better now that 52 is on the team.
Yeah, you know, makes sense. And here's the thing that's impossible for you to answer, because I can't answer it either. I don't know what Trubisky is. That's why I don't know. I mean, but that's fair though, right? It's fair. Like
it is.
You dealt with this too. Even though you won't say it, I'll say it for you. You dealt with a JV offense at times when you play with the Bears, and the same thing here with last year. I mean, those players underachieved. They were not in a position to try to help this team score. They did well against a Cincinnati team that laid down last year. You remember that game? But I don't know what Trubisky is. So, like, I know what the running game can be. I love the weapons that they have, again, on paper, offensively, with the wide receivers and tight ends. I think it's a solid offensive line that can keep, but I don't know. So that's why you can't get, you'll give your prediction when you get to NBC Sports Chicago. I understand that. But at the same, because you're holding it back, I understand. But at the same time, I don't know what Trubisky is. And we're going to find out this year exactly what he is.
I think we'll find out if he's taking a step forward or not. I think he will take a step forward. I don't know how good he can be. I know some people believe that he can be really, really good. I'm not there yet. I think he can be good. I think he can be pretty good. I think he'll be consistent. That's what I think. But with this team, the way this team is built, with the running game, with a really good defense or a dominant defense, how good does he really have to be? We don't need him to be Drew Brees. We don't need him to be Peyton Manning. We need him to do, like, have two or three really, really key drives down the field, score some points, because this defense isn't going to give up much. And with a dominant defense, you're going to get more possessions throughout a game, as opposed to not getting those possessions because that opposing offense is on the field so long. So I think we'll find out a little bit more about him. I think it's the people around him now. You look at that receiving core. Last year when Cam Meredith went down, you would have thought somebody would have stepped up. I tell you what, you let somebody go down this year. There's a kid over there, last name Miller. Hey, he can't wait to get his opportunity. Okay? He cannot wait. Wims, we see Wims, man. Every time he get on the field, he shows up. He shows he makes plays. These kids can't wait to get on the field. I fully expect Robinson. I fully expect Gabriel, Trey Burton, all these guys to really come out and play well, because these young guys are going to push them. That is how you get to be a really, really good football team, because of the second teamers pushing you because they believe they're first teamers. That's how you get it, because everybody is accountable. Everybody has to be accountable to you. You make a mistake or you don't run the right route, well, there's somebody that will run the right route. So, and having that, I mean, I know the whole looking over your shoulder part, well, sometimes it's good to look over your shoulder or have somebody breathing down your neck, because it makes you do your job better, or at the best you can do it all the time. So I love what Ryan Pace has done. Man, you know, he's always been – he's my guy. So I've always supported him. I like him a lot. He's a friend of mine. So, hey, listen, I love what he's doing. I'm glad he had the to pull the trigger on one, Trubisky, and then on two, going and getting Khalil Mack. Because looking at this team, you know they're going to be able to stop the run. And then with Leonard Floyd getting hurt, he was our only true pass rush threat. If you can get a team in third and long all you want, Aaron Rodgers is going to sit back there for 7 seconds and deliver the football. He's going to get a first down. Now we got somebody to go get him. And it also opens up things for the other guys on that line. Hicks is going to have a humongous year. He's going to make the Pro Bowl. You heard it here first.
All right, my friend. I'm glad you spent some time. All the best to Mrs. Brown. That's my favorite Mrs. That's my favorite Brown is Mrs. Brown. And she's going to get it done.
How about them Gators, baby? How about them Gators? Come on.
Oh, come on. Really? Really? Hell's coming to breakfast against Kentucky on Saturday. I just want you to know. Here comes Stoops.
31 years in a row. Nobody's worried about Kentucky. Nobody's worried about Kentucky.
You beat Charleston Southern like you know played what? Somebody.
Hey, I am going down. I am going down to that Florida Georgia game.
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on. Let's go. You don't want to go, because Coach Mullen down there, and he got my boys back. Them Georgia folks gonna be scared. Oh. And get them like Gators.
All right, that's enough. Goodbye, Alex Brown. That's enough. Making fun of my Georgia Bulldog. Alex Brown with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs and the Brewers, and he joins us now from Miller Park. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood, we're going to the fifth inning. Cubs leading 4-1, a very long and eventful fourth inning right there as the Cubs scored four in the top of the inning. A home run by Daniel Murphy to lead off the inning was followed by a single by Baez, single by Rizzo, and Baez did one of those jaunts around the bases where he has no business scoring, but he does because the Brewers threw the ball around. Zobrist drove in Rizzo with a double. Then later on, Wilson Contreras had an RBI single. So four runs there. And then the bottom of the inning, Quintana got into a jam. Eventually gets out of it. Bases loaded, two outs. He gets Orlando Arcia to pop up. A bad hop on Chris Bryant allowed runners to move up a couple bases there. And then he hit a batter. But, again, bases loaded, two outs. Arcia pops up. So, like I said, a very eventful fourth inning for both teams. But the Cubs lead this one 4-1 as we go to the fifth. Back to you.
All right, Jesse, thank you. Tales from the Hood is next.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood. It says under the hood on the sheet here. Felix, you know what? Don't you do it. That's all right. I'll take care of my own. I will go and talk to my girl down the hallway, Latoya.
Hey, Jay Hood.
Latoya, it's the segment's called Tales from the Hood.
Oh, if you think we haven't mentioned, it's been mentioned. She'll probably immediately change it for you, though.
I'm going to go down
sure,
there.
Sure, Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan. And what Billy told me, like, I don't know.
Who is
Eric.
Billy, damn Billy. It?
Okay, Billy told me I should change the copy. Billy, no, his name's Eric. Okay, Billy. Billy says that Tales from the Hood is brought to you by Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. The Wildcats return to Ryan Field this fall after a 10-win season, Billy, to host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more. Buy season and single game tickets at NUSports.com, NUSports.com. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. How about this one here? Airport security trays carry more germs than toilets. What's the most germ-filled spot in an airport? The bathrooms, the crowded waiting areas, the passport checking counter? Surprisingly, none of the above. A new study from a team of experts from the UK's University of Nottingham published in the BMC Infectious Diseases Journal, has revealed those airport security plastic trays as the biggest culprit for spreading germs in airports. So the next time that you're dumping your phone, passport, or laptop into that tray, it might be worth having a hand sanitizer handy. Now, I don't find myself to be an overt germaphobe. I'm not that guy. But I never thought about those gray plastic trays at the airport at O'Hare or Midway having that much germs. Like, I mean, more germs than a toilet?
More germs than a toilet is crazy. Toilets probably get washed more often than these bins. How often do you think they throw those bins through the washer or anything like that? The toilets probably are clean multiple times a day.
That's a good point.
But, that's a problem. Like, I would have never, as you said, I would never have thought of how dirty those are, but everyone just throws their junk in there, and then it goes to the next.
I never thought about that.
No, it makes sense, but man.
So, Felix, the question is, if you had to eat off of one or the other, the airport trays or a toilet, which one would you choose?
Well, based on that information, toilet.
I would have to do the tray still. The toilet, mentally, I wouldn't be able to do the toilet. Nope.
Setting me up there, I see.
I mean,
hey.
They're saying that, and yes, it's half-assed, but it is cleaned, that toilet.
Yeah. No way.
And you have the automatic sheets that keep rolling around the toilet bowl.
I never thought of it that way. Just, okay.
Do you guys bird nest when you poop in public? Like, do you take the toilet paper and put it all over the toilet seat?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Not the toilet. No, it's they had the baby sheets
they
there.
They do have the new ones now that all come out. I'm just wondering. I don't do that here, but I do that like if I'm at like a random, I don't know, restaurant or bathroom.
The one upstairs, by the way. The one upstairs, you pull one of those baby sheets out and like the whole package.
You get 80 of them. Yeah, the whole thing just clucks out.
And with like a big old staple on it too. It's like, it's like, what am I doing?
Thank you, Noel.
Noel's got it.
Thank you, Noel.
He's upstairs like, what?
Yeah, I know. No. We're interrupting his Cubs game while he's working.
Oh, you know that.
What happened, bro? I heard you talking about me. What's up, bro? It's like, what?
It's got staple in it. That seems unhealthy. Not safe. I'm not sure, though.
I just want to peel off one or two. I don't want to have, like, the whole thing.
The whole cardboard comes out. The whole, like, thing just clunks out of the case.
Oh, man. Out of Virginia, man erects electrified fence to keep bus stop kids off his lawn. A Sandston man, this is the area, took down an electrified fence he erected early Tuesday morning. The fence separated from his yard on East Berry Street in South Wilson Way. The man, whose name is Brian, said he was sick of students who cursed, fought, and littered at the bus stop. They don't respect other people's land. I pick up trash every day. So he decided to hook up a battery to his fence to provide relief. He said he ultimately removed the fence later Tuesday, not because of any potential danger it may pose to students, but rather he placed the fence on a county property line, not his own land.
Well, that and he just hooked up jumper cables to the fence. Like, he couldn't even order some sort of actual electric fence.
Is he right, by the way?
I mean, he's got the right too, if it was in his lawn. I personally would have no problem with the kids playing in my yard waiting for the bus, but...
But not just a fence, an electrified fence.
Yeah, oh yeah, keep them really out. I'm surprised he didn't have a cattle prod just sitting at the corner, like...
I just can't... I'm trying to figure out if he's in the right... I think that I understand his point, but I just don't know, electrified fence trying to
kill the kids.
Oh, that's
a little much for kids, absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, as far as I saw the story, no arrest in that story. He just because he took it down.
Well, he improperly put it up.
So, there you go. Eric Ostrowski.
Barry Enderby has staked a strong claim to be UK's unluckiest man after he was knocked off his bike, causing him to miss out on a lotto win of £10,000. So, the 70-year-old man who every single day rides his bike to... which in the UK, they call it the bookies, apparently, to get his lottery tickets. And he was on his bike ride, and he got hit by a car on his bike, causing him to be, like, kicked off his bike. So his leg was hurt, realized he wasn't going to make it, so he tried to hustle. He was 15 minutes late. Later that day, he realized the numbers he plays every single day, which are his daughter's birthday and then the two houses he grew up in. Mm-hmm. One, he would have won £10,000. Little upset. So first he lost out on winning the lottery because he got hit by a car. Little upset, decides to go out to the pub that night, have a drink. Comes home, he's hungry. He's making some fries, frying some fries up on his range. Fell asleep.
Oh.
And then he wakes up and he decides to put water on his grease fire and burn down his whole kitchen. So that's a hell of a day for this man. Burned down his kitchen after missing out on a £10,000 lottery ticket.
That's a hell of a day indeed.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Grease fire. What should I do? Water.
It's the worst answer there is. It just explodes.
Kids, don't do that.
Nope.
Don't do that. By the way, Twitter's lighting up on this show. We've got some listeners on this show. My good friend, the lovely Peggy Kaczynski, says, I'm crying laughing as Alex Brown is listing the 2007 Super Bowl potential Hall of Famers, and quietly in the background, I say, Spice? So, trying to give Spice Adams some love. Also, my good friend, Miss Price, Sean Price, she says, now ruining flight travel for me now. Thanks. Exactly what a traveling germaphobe needs to hear this evening.
Wear gloves and a face mask. That's the only answer at this point.
Yeah, so be careful. Like, have a liner for your tray when you go to the airport.
Yeah, take some from the bathroom and put it in the tray. Done.
Sorry, Miss Price. I know. These mugs. I know. All right. Felix, what do you have?
All right. If you see the six-eyed sand spider that is highly venomous, please let the Philadelphia Museum know. This spider, along with 7,000 other creepy crawlies, have gone missing. So apparently, about 7,000 insects have gone missing, right? And according to the New York Times report, police have zeroed in on three suspects. All were current or former museum employees. The report cites security footage showing the thieves slipping out of the building with a large plastic container. And inside those containers, an estimated amount of $50,000 worth of these creatures. Like, what are you planning to do with these things? Can you really sell them?
There's a market for everything, right?
Right, it is.
There's a market for everything.
It's crazy.
50 grand worth of bugs.
Sure.
Amazing.
Sure, people buy anything.
It's true.
So I can't be surprised at that story because people look at value for everything. Mm-hmm. There's bug peoples.
They are pretty gnarly looking spiders. I'm looking at a picture of one.
Six? Did you say six eyes?
Yeah.
Six-eyed spider. Imagine if that thing goes loose and you run into it.
Oh, I don't think that's so bad.
What?
Six-eyed spiders?
A six-eyed spider?
Yeah, well, that's come not on, so Jonathan. Bad.
Yeah, I mean, and then highly venomous. That's not bad.
Highly venomous six-eyed spider?
Yeah.
Do you know how long I've been in the radio business?
Oh.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.